afternoon. This is the time set for the public hearing in ADKT 615 regarding repeal and replacement of the Nevada electronic filing and conversion rules. Justice Bell is listening to the hearing remotely. She's unable to be present with us this afternoon, but she'll of course be participating in our decision regarding the matter before us. So we do have the petition that was filed in this case on December 5th, and then it was set for hearing and open for public comment. We did get some written comments. Why don't we begin then with, I believe Catherine Stocks from our Administrative Office of the Courts, who submitted the petition, is here to present this matter today. So you want to come on up.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Do we have anyone up north? Is the courtroom even open up north?
No one is here, Chief Justice.
Ah, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. This particular petition in my role as the director of the AOC and the state court administrator is related directly to the Nevada judiciary's strategic plan. And specifically, this is in the furtherance of objective number two, which is to support the sustainable and user-focused innovation to improve the delivery of court services by implementing a statewide e-filing system. This court originally promulgated these rules in 2007. There have been minor updates over time.
I think we're getting some feedback from somewhere.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. There have been minor updates over time, but this is a substantive repeal and replace to essentially acknowledge that we have the ability now and the money now to do a statewide e-filing system instead of having optional e-file. I want to thank the majority of the members here that are of the public that are going to either speak or are here in support of the speakers, because each person here was a part of drafting these rules. We received substantive feedback from our trial courts, specifically the 2nd and the 8th judicial districts. We had informal comments and conversations with other trial courts throughout the state as part of this process. The state bar is here, who have provided practical application feedback about the reality of deploying an e-filing system statewide, what works and what might not, some lessons learned. We also have legal aid here, who has worked with us, well, in my entire tenure, we've worked closely to see not only the practical application from the attorney or the practitioner side, but also that self-represented litigant side and how we might be able to do this. So one of two of the most significant changes related to this ADKT are making mandatory e-filing for all Nevada attorneys. And then the other side is making mandatory e-filing for interested parties. And I believe the bar may have comments on it, but I did receive specific feedback from members of the bar related to concerns over emailing over reports, especially in child cases, and the security of that information, where an e-file platform will allow for interested parties to be uploading directly in and not sending that information over email to further secure the information that is so important, that PII that gets passed on in cases. In 2021, the AOC conducted an e-file survey of all of our trial courts, which is what set this off. And at that time, only 8 of our 74 trial courts had e-file. We had overwhelming support. We asked, if we do e-filing, will you adopt it? And we only had one court report that they were not interested in participating. Hopefully we can sway that court over time to join in the cause. We also had, as far as this goes, the financial piece to consider. At the time, only rural outlying Clark County noted that they could have funds available to potentially do an e-file, but they noted concerns with integrating with their case management system. That's something that we've also considered and procured funds for under the state and local fiscal recovery funds, those federal ARPA dollars. Those are not only for deploying the e-file, but once we have e-file live, then paying to integrate into those individual trial courts' case management systems. We also are pleased to report that in April, not a hard date certain in April, we have 10 courts that have volunteered to be the pilots for this system. That's Boulder Muni, Hawthorne Justice Court, Churchill County District Court, Henderson Muni, all three Elko courts, Las Vegas Muni, Pahrump Justice Court, and Union Justice Court. At that time, they're going to be our testers to make sure that we're deploying this correctly, that we have the correct training in place, that we have manuals in place for users, both attorneys and unrepresented litigants. And then, let's see here. Some of the other items that came up that I'd just like to mention with this, we had some questions about technical concerns going to a cloud-based solution instead of using on-premise servers. One of the advantages of that is that it's a one-user logon then. We will be working and already have coordinated with the state bar to maintain the list of active attorneys. Those attorney roles will be able to ensure that an individual attorney or a firm will be able to have one account on all the AOC-supported e-file instead of having to have individual accounts per court. We also secured the funds to be able to absorb the cost of filing. That's not the actual fees that are already required by statute, but we would not then have to pass on a per filing fee to the user, which improves that access to justice piece. So back to that cloud question. So some of the considerations we had was where to locate the solution. We went with the cloud just because of the reality of maintaining security. And this is an IT answer, so I will read it instead of riffing. While it seems counterintuitive, the cloud generally has better security than an on-premise solution. This is due to the fact that a company such as AWS or Microsoft hires significantly greater numbers of security personnel at a higher rate of pay. Their cybersecurity budgets afford them the latest advances in hardware and software. Simply, the AOC would not be able to run. We do not have enough employees. We would need to have a 24/7 cybersecurity team to monitor. That's why going with the cloud-based solution was that decision. Also, the other piece of that is, what about vendor security? The AOC has selected Tibera as the vendor for the statewide e-filing system. No vendor is completely immune from a cyber attack. Tibera does regular penetration and other types of cyber prevention measures with outside firms. And so they also, in other incidents that have happened to courts across the country, Tibera has fared better than some other providers in that aspect. And there's also the disaster recovery piece. In the cloud, disaster recovery is much easier. For example, in Texas, the courts were able to continue to accept e-filings because they were able, with the system being on the cloud, there wasn't a shutdown process of on-premise servers. So let's see. And I think then the last piece for this is effective date. This is one where there have been a lot of questions about that. I believe comments from the 8th include a request to give a 12-month period so that their e-filing system can be updated to effectuate the rules that this court would approve. On that, it's that the bigger piece is the effective date for the mandatory filing. So there's the actual rules themselves and then the attorneys and the interested parties piece. For the attorneys, when we were discussing it, we already, it looks like, are going to have quite a few voluntary participants, and we have had positive feedback from the state bar, looking forward to being able to e-file into those rural jurisdictions that right now it can be a lot more difficult to get your filings in. So I'm happy to answer questions and hope that I have not gone on too long. And I will say that, yet again, I want to thank all of the support that we've gotten and all the feedback we got into creating this petition, because without the work of our trial courts, the state bar, legal aid, we wouldn't have come up with these rules. And I think we've done a pretty good job. If you see that there's only been two public comments making some, in our minds, minor changes, and to make those rules better.
Thank you.
The pilot program start?
So that's April.
April mm-hmm. of this year. Okay, thank you.
And so in terms of effective date, do you have a sorry if I missed it. What's your recommendation on that?
Well, there's two to consider related to the attorney piece. It could be within 3-6 months after a court goes live. It could become mandatory in that particular trial court, or waiting to get it deployed across the entire state and then doing a uniform mandatory. I don't know what the court's preference would be. The bar has seemed interested enough that I don't know that the forced mechanism seems like it might be as required. The interested party piece, there's a lot of work to do and training to do with the executive branch entities and nonprofits to train into the proper way to do that. I've been told by the IT folks that there could be issues with some things like DPS connections. Those kind of things might be an issue. So the interested party mandate could be near the end of the project once we have the system up and can actually keep the court updated on the training we've been able to provide to those parties.
Anyone else have questions, colleagues? No? Okay, thank you. So I think we have some other folks here today who are wishing to testify. Ah, good, a volunteer.
That's rare. Good afternoon. Chief Justice, Justices, I'm Steve Grierson from the 8th District Court. I'm the court executive and clerk of the court. I brought our real electronic filing experts with me just in case you ask some detailed questions, because I have not made a personal transaction myself. So if we have detailed questions, I have Mike Doan and our Antoinette Nomek-Miller and Chris O'Connor and Lauren Payne here if we have detailed questions that I can't answer. I appreciate Catherine Stock and the OC for bringing this matter forward to all the state court administrators across the state, because it takes a lot of time to review these and try to think about the nuances that affect e-filing in our district. We support the AOC's current proposal, and having been around this topic personally since 2009 when the 8th jumped off the ledge and went mandatory on its own, I know how important it is to try to keep evaluating what you did and try to get it right in the future. It was a difficult process, and we got a lot of feedback at the time. So I really appreciate you allowing this to come forward. To illustrate the magnitude of the impact on the 8th, it's a very busy court, obviously. We've received 4.3 million filings since the current rule was implemented. Of those, 53,876 filings were non-conforming transactions. On average, a non-conforming document, that process is estimated to take between 8 and 20 minutes for the employee. The total number of refund requests since the implementation is 4,551 refunds, which averages about 18 per week. The total amount of outstanding fee balance is $1.6 million. We've sent close to 3 million emails to collect unpaid balances, resulting in payments totaling $3.3 million. With respect to our additional proposed changes to Rule 9, which is our additional proposal, we appreciated when our then previous chief judge and our very team here in the audience and I worked to amend our local rule 8.03, which really gave us clear guidelines and limits to our internal clerk management of electronic filing. So all of the electronic filers that are participating, we are all on the same page. It's our hope that the changes to the statewide rules before you today will help everyone else by further clarifying all of these procedures and improve the case condition. While it's difficult to anticipate each nuance to all of the electronic filing rules and how the filers use your electronic filing system, we remain committed to excellence in serving the public in this regard. As noted in my filed document, the three additional changes are reinforcing that unsigned orders are non-conforming. Similar to what we added to our current local rule, we recommend setting a limit on your non-conforming submissions. We suggested that you increase it from our 7 days to maybe a 14-day time period to make sure that everybody has enough time to try to conform. so all the parties have a chance to fix it. And for efficiency, provide guidelines and a procedure is number three for noticing the filing parties by electronic email rather than having to file notices. It's really easy to tell someone you didn't pay the right amount of money, you put the wrong case number on by email. It goes very fast, and conforming happens rather quickly if you provide us that guideline. We thank you for the opportunity to present our comments. We've also evaluated, how much it's going to take for us to transition back to the kind of the previous condition of being able to kind of screen the initial petitions and predominantly the answers as well, because they're, they require a filing fee. And we would just ask that you consider giving us some kind of manageable time frame in addition to all the other IT things that we have going on. We just need a little time to kind of slot this project back in and for us to be able to do this. So I thank you for your time, and I'm here for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Anyone, any questions?
I have a quick question, Steve.
Yeah.
Sure. In terms of 50,000 non-conforming documents.
53,876.
And over a million emails sent.
Three.
Is that one of those things where it's 10% of the people causing 90% of the problems?
I don't know the exact answer to that, but there are very common users that have common problems frequently.
You've got a lot of frequent flyers.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
And as much as sorry. Mm-hmm.
Just this week,
it's not really on point, but I'm just curious. Did you guys replace your BlueJeans system?
We did.
Like an eighth? What are you guys using now?
We're using Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I know that was off topic, but I was just curious.
And so the eighth has been allowing non-attorneys to e-file for some time. Do you have helpful advice on managing that?
Yeah.
That's part of what this is aiming for is statewide. That it would be, yes, I'm sure Mr. Doan does. But just on at least allowing the opportunity for non-attorneys to be able to submit documents for e-filing.
Yeah, so this has obviously been a chronic topic or a long-standing conversation about how to do it. Most of the systems that I'm aware of and the one that we currently use, it's the verification and the validity of the registered user that's always been our barrier electronically. So if somebody came on and tried to register, do we know who they are? Do we know what they're doing in the case? Now, we've recently, because of the advent of learning electronic capabilities, we think that there isn't anybody that we can't figure out how to give access now. We have a really neat, we think is a kind of an electronic version of a front counter that allows us to verify who these folks would be, and that would allow us to give registered access to anybody that you believe should have access to the case in an electronic manner. It was very difficult. We had requested it for years. The case management providers didn't have a solution, but I think we're there. We can do it now. So. We're excited to do that.
Sorry, which vendor do you use?
We're Tyler Technologies, the Odyssey case management system.
Right, okay, yeah. Of course. So with the Tibera that we're adopting, would they be able to talk to each other? Does that make sense as a question?
Now you're getting me to something that's a little beyond my technical capabilities.
I have a question, and it probably betrays my ignorance more than anything else, but the rule, both existing and the proposed new rule, talk about registered users having access and those being parties or attorneys on a case. There's a problem with people like take the appellate pro bono program, which will come up. A lawyer wants to look at a docket and the filings in that docket. If you're in federal court on PACER, you can do that. You can't do that in the eighth. And is it the case that you would not be able to do that under this new rule 14?
My belief is that we can achieve the ability for anybody who's a registered user or a self-represented party to become a registered user and have access to the entire case.
But what about to another case that they're not the attorney on, but they want to look at it and see if they want to come in on it?
I believe, and if I'm mistaken, Mike, please stand up, but I believe that you can register into a case, but you wouldn't have access to the sealed portions of those cases because you're not considered the self-represented litigant or the attorney of record per se. So I believe that they would be able to get into those cases.
And is sealed different from confidential?
Well, confidential in our district is a designation for the entire case type. Sealed is generally document driven.
And is that an electronic limitation or a policy limitation? So if you wanted to make the e-filing system in the 8th be like PACER, where anyone who logs in can look at any document in any case unless that document is sealed, would that be able to be done on this system if you altered the criteria that are applied to limit who can see what and which matters?
Can I get help on that one?
Okay.
Please.
Oh, friend.
Mike.
You follow what I'm asking?
I do.
I'm not probably using the right words.
And state your name for the record.
Mike, District Court IT. Yes, today you can do that. And if, as long as it's not sealed, any attorney can look at any document, any case, as long as it's not confidential or the case itself isn't sealed.
Okay.
And is it accurate to say that that happens through the case management system, which is not necessarily the same as the e-filing system?
It's a little complicated. There's usually configurations on both ends, right? There's some configuration on the e-filing side and some configuration on the case management side. So they work together.
But they could be set so that just being an attorney gives you access to
correct.
Anything that is not sealed.
Correct.
Okay. And it could be a totally open system with the exception of sealed records. So any member of the public could go in and become a registered user and gain access that way?
Correct.
And the system would support that. It's a policy decision to bar that.
Correct. And again, I'm speaking for the AIF system, Biolinser,
right.
and Odyssey, not...
I'm just trying to understand if it's a system limitation or a policy limitation.
Any limitation that would stop somebody from doing that would be a policy limitation because we can allow anyone to access anything.
Okay.
From a technical standpoint.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry, can I get the witness's name again, please? Thank you.
D-O-A-N.
D-O-A-N?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very much. Anything else for Mr. Gerson? Nope. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Oh, good. Mr. Dreitzer.
Good afternoon, Chief Justices, and may it please the court. Richard Dreitzer, a president-elect of the State Bar of Nevada. Thank you so much for the chance to speak with you on this issue today. The first thing we'd like to do, the State Bar would like to thank Ms. Stocks and the AOC for taking the initiative to put forth the amendment on this, because we believe this will promote consistency and uniform e-filing in Nevada courts, which we think is important. We also want to thank the court for the chance to speak in favor of this. The State Bar believes that ADKT 615 is consistent with our mission to serve members and promote the public interest because it will promote uniform standards of electronic filing regardless of the judicial district in which an attorney practices, which will create consistency for representation of clients. We believe the amendment is also, God bless you, that's okay. We also believe the amendment is in line with other initiatives that the State Bar is pursuing to ensure the legal needs of Nevada citizens, regardless of whether they reside in rural or urban areas. Having access to e-filing, particularly in rural areas of the state, is critical when you're representing a client that doesn't reside in the same city that you practice in. So this amendment, we believe it's also an access to justice issue. If people want to be able to take advantage of the courts as is their right, opening up e-filing across the state will allow that to occur. In preparing for today's hearing, the State Bar did do a survey of its members regarding the rural practice work group for feedback. The response was overwhelmingly supportive. Uniform e-filing procedures would eliminate delays in state court email service, such as if you want to mail something to Winnemucca, my understanding is, as an example, it gets routed through Salt Lake City. So if you can do this electronically, it would save those sort of odd postal delays that could occur. It also saves on expenses and sending a runner to file a document if there's a rush, et cetera. So overall, we think this is a service that is welcomed and needed across the state. And other than that, thank you very much for listening to my comments, and I appreciate the court's consideration.
Any questions for Mr. Dreitzer about the bar? Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the court. My name is Stephanie McDonald. I'm from the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada. First off, I want to thank Catherine Stocks and the AOC for her extraordinary efforts in bringing e-filing to the state at last, and her amazing work in putting together these rules that are going to benefit all Nevadans, no matter where they are. Your access to justice shouldn't depend on what county you live in, and this is a big step towards making sure that happens. We submitted written comments, so I won't belabor my verbal comments too much. We're largely in support of the rules. We have three small requests that we wanted to make, and they all pertain to Rule 14. Rule 14 governs the access to documents within an electronic filing, electronic case management system. Rule 14 is not the proposed Rule 14 is not terribly different than the existing Rule 14 that we've all been living with for many, many years. There are a few minor changes, but what I wanted to really bring everybody's attention to are three different subsections of that rule. The first one is subsection A. We've talked about it a bit today. It's always required a court to provide access to electronic documents. It's always required the court to provide access to parties and their attorneys to the documents in a case. The new rule is largely the same. It makes a couple small changes. What we are ultimately really asking for is to empower the AOC to have some oversight mechanism to ensure that this rule is enacted throughout the state. The e-filing system the state intends to move to will certainly have this feature built in as it goes live. But as it's been mentioned earlier, it's not mandated that every district adopt the state's e-filing system. And so we want to ensure that those who are not, well, everybody, regardless of the system you're using, is going to have access to the documents in their e-filing account. This has been a significant challenge in our local district. I understand and appreciate our friends from the 8th are working on a solution to that. I am encouraged by their statements today that something is on the way. To date, we haven't seen it yet. So we simply want some sort of oversight to ensure that this conversation keeps happening and that we do get access to every litigant to see what's going on in their case. The next section, really largely the same, governs 14B, governs access to confidential documents. We are suggesting just adding explicitly that as it reads right now, it says court staff will have access to confidential documents. We want to ensure that parties of record and litigants will have access as well. Again, I think we're working on a system to ensure that that happens. We just want to make sure that everybody is able to see every document in their own case, because without the ability to view your own case, see the documents that are filed, see the court dates that are coming up, people are walking blind, not really sure what to do. Access and information is power, so we want to make sure they have that. And then the final request comes through subsection D. This governs personal information that is provided through the e-filing system. The rule as is lovely. What we have found in the effort to create forms for anybody to use in any district throughout Nevada is there are very local rules that govern how personal information should be treated on a document. There are several districts who have a local rule on the subject. Many require an affirmation somewhere on a form or somewhere in a case letting the court know if there's personal information in there so they can presumably deal with it. Rule 13D already governs what a person is to do if a document has personal information in there. We're asking that there be an explicit addition that says no affirmation is needed when a document is going through the e-filing system. Just for instance, in the second judicial district, every form needs an affirmation on the last page. In the 11th judicial district, every form needs an affirmation on the first page. In the 11th judicial district, you need an affirmation once at the beginning of filing and never again unless it has personal information. The rules are all over the place. They're impossible to satisfy all of the forms. And this court has exhibited its great commitment to making sure that self-represented litigants have access to forms that are going to be accepted throughout the state. Adding this exception would go a long way towards doing that. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Chief, may I ask a question?
Please.
Just a kind of a technical question on the last piece. Can't the actual system ask for the affirmation? So before I submit, I want to submit my document now. Can it say, you know, before I submit, check the box. I affirm that this document does not contain, you know, the information. I mean, can't there be a system fix on that, at least for the people that use the same system, as opposed to having to have a typed out, which I'm familiar with, affirmation separate paragraph? Like, it won't accept it unless you affirm that.
Right.
And it's also a reminder before you get to the end, like, oh, I'm affirming that there's no social security numbers or no personal information.
I would say yes. As the person who didn't design any of the e-filing systems we use, I would probably defer to our tech experts and those who work with the providers. It would seem like an easy addition to add in there. I believe the way this rule reads and the way it's enacted right now in the 8th, there are certain kinds of documents that we all know are going to contain personal information. A financial form is always going to contain personal information, things like that. So the process of filing actually renders that document confidential from the beginning. It doesn't get filed as a public document where somebody has to disclose, I've included personal information that the court's going to have to protect. At the time of filing, the filing code itself tells the system this either is personal information or it's not. Now, I'm not sure. I believe the way I read the rule, the state's system should probably be doing the same kind of thing. But to answer your question, yes, I think it could be done if I were running the world.
Another question. Do you distinguish between parties, self-represented litigants, and attorneys? So by that I mean, in as I recall in the second, when we went to mandatory e-filing, there's an e-filing system. You have to register. Only registered e-filers can file into a case. There was also a system where the public, you know, where you could peruse. Like, I could be an e-filer, but I couldn't just pick through all the other cases unless I was on that other system. So, for instance, we have CTRAF online. A member of the public can pull up a docket. Now, there's things on the docket they can't see, or we have, you know, a private area on the docket. But is it the intention that the public can access every part of a presumably public docket, or that self-represented litigants can access the same things attorneys can and file in the same way an attorney can in their own case? I don't know that I'm articulating that right, but I'm just trying to determine how many different layers we're talking about. Because if you're the self-represented litigant, you are the attorney on the case.
Correct.
And so it would appear that to be able to represent yourself, you need that functionality. But if I'm a party on a case that's represented by an attorney, then I have a representative who needs different functionality than I do. So I don't know if that's, I've articulated that, but I'm just trying to suss out what the concerns are.
It's a great question. It has a lot of layers in there and a lot of public concerns, some of which I am mindful are pending before this court. So I want to be a little careful about how I respond. Yes, a self-represented litigant has the ability, should always have the ability through these rules, has the ability to have an e-filing account and e-file any documents into their own case that they want. Attorneys, same. They're going to have full access to the e-filing system. they're going to have full access to the cases they are the attorney of record on so that they can always monitor what is happening. The distinction between what is a public case and what is a confidential document and what is a sealed case gets a little hairy. Documents, our concern right now is there are a number of case types, just case types in general, that upon filing are fully sealed by law. Nobody anywhere can ever access that document. I take that back. Attorneys of record can access that case through their e-filing system. No parties can access it. No member of the public can access it. Anybody who is not an attorney who wants access to that case, again, I'm speaking only for the eighth, is required to present ID, typically in person at the courthouse, where their identity can be verified and ensure that information documents are provided to them as a party. There's some work to be done in regard to what case types are sealed, what kinds of documents are sealed. Ultimately, I think that's a conversation probably for another day. At this point, what we're really urging is I, as the litigant, it shouldn't matter if my case is a run-of-the-mill divorce, no kids, no property, no debt, where I'm able to at least see a public docket of listings and I can see what's going on, versus somebody who has other issues, a different case type, who can file their documents, but has no access to ever see what's going on within their case. I think the critical distinction is just ensuring, however the law determines a case type or a case document that should be deemed confidential, the parties to the case themselves should always have access to that case, to that document, to their court dates, to be able to see what is going on so that they don't run amok and run afoul of the court rules, missing court dates, missing critical filings, having cases dismissed because they just didn't know. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Question?
I have a quick question. Stephanie, you said something about wanting something in here, I think, to give the AOC some type of oversight over, it was a polite way of saying we want you to make sure the horses drink, basically, right? I think, you know, when we did the Virtual Advocacy Commission, one of the things we did was we created it with a start date and said we're also going to set a date in 6 months and come back and invite public comment, see how everything is actually playing out across the state. Are courts complying with that? Are they instituting it? What are the problems? What are the concerns? You know, what do we need to maybe revisit? Is that something that you would kind of favor doing here as well? Because I think putting the AOC in charge of kind of micromanaging everybody's institution of this is somewhat.
I think that would be a great solution, just to ensure this isn't a day where we all talk about our hopes and dreams and then go back to the inevitable fires waiting at our desk that tend to override other projects that we're trying to get our attention on. So any kind of follow-up, whether it's a follow-up public hearing, if Catherine doesn't want to assume control, I think she'd do great, but I think that would be an excellent option too.
Anything else, colleagues? No. Thanks so much, Ms.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak today? No. Okay. Ms. Stocks, did you have anything further in response to the comments that we had? She's nodding her head. Okay. Colleagues, do you have anything you wanted to address to anybody before we complete the hearing? All right, then.
Chief.
We will go
ahead.
Oh, sorry. Oh, thank you. Yes. There's nobody in Carson City? Great. Okay. Thank you for checking. That will close the public hearing regarding ADKT 615. This matter will be submitted for a decision, and our court will consider it, and we'll let you know. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.